That's the first one? Right. If this mic really doesn't work, I've been told if it does work, then it's going to be Ken's fault that it doesn't work for him. But if it does, if it doesn't work, we'll just go no mic. I used to coach, so I think I have a loud enough voice that I really don't need a mic, but we'll just go with it to save it. When you get towards the end of school, you feel the voice starting to rise. This is our money-making time period, so we earn every bit of the $50,000 that we make the next 2 weeks, believe it or not. I wanted to start off by introducing myself. My name is Brian Lee. My wife is in the cry room with our six-month-old, Camden, and then Lainey's two-and-a-half, who's also in the cry room because she is the one crying right now. I say we because every man that serves this church has a strong wife behind him that helps the process of making it all work. In fact, all the things that you see up there, not family camp related just yet, she's made those phone calls, but I wanted to kind of give you an idea of some things that we have going on in this church for the next couple of months throughout the summer. The family picnic, which you just heard, is at Maryland Edgar Park. If you know where Mama J's is, right off of 45, it is literally right behind Mama J's, except you have to go Robinson Road and then come around. It's kind of weird the way it goes. You can't, like, take that road right there by in between that hearing center, I think is what it is, in Mama J's, but it's in that area. There is a playground for little kids. There's basketball courts. There's volleyball courts. We just wanted to give you guys an opportunity, people of all ages, to come and just kind of spend some time together, getting to know each other. One of the things that I struggle with throughout the week is I don't find myself in my job around as Christian people as much as I would like to be. So we want to provide a couple of places that we could do that. Of course, family camp, I'm going to give my plug. If you've never been to family camp, this thing feels really weird on my ear. If you've never been to family camp, I would strongly recommend going. It is a wonderful, wonderful weekend to be with other brothers and sisters. And it's probably the closest thing that I think you can get to of what the church is supposed to look like, because everyone has to pitch in to make the weekend work. From Kay Dottie serving the first dinner on Friday night to the closing ceremonies at the end where we're giving away candy for a lot of dumb things that people have done throughout the week that Ryan Coleman picked out. But it's a really great weekend, and I hope that you will consider going. The drive is probably the worst part, and it's really not that bad. But it's a great weekend to spend together. That's the 20th and 22nd. Ryan and Jess Coleman, they put a lot of work into this event. I'm going to point them out, so if you have any questions, go talk to them. They're in the back. So if you have any questions, please talk to them, but I recommend going to that. Bouncing Bears. I put of all ages because when you think of, like, bounce houses, you think of, like, two-year-olds. But I'm not going to lie to you. I really enjoy the place, and I'm 30-something. So that's Friday, and it's totally free. We're going to pick up the charge. We would just like for you to come. It's a great time to enjoy your childhood again and watch your children completely go nuts in a contained environment. You notice I use the word contained, like they can't run out of the building. And that's going to be Friday, June 27th. And then we're going to have a back-to-school family picnic. We're going to do it, I think we've chosen the Sawmill Park because we want to rent the pool as well as the pavilion. So we're looking at that towards the end of August, and I'll get those dates out. But again, just a couple of different times that we could spend some time together, get to know one another. It's called involvement. So we're going to try to put some things that you guys can be involved in. I'm going to be honest with you today. My job, really, I really start working like 3 weeks when I have to start watching two children. But the last 3 weeks of my job have pretty much been a piece of cake. It's been shuffling kids all over the place. And since I was an ex-coach, my campus knows that I have the driving certification to drive the buses. So anytime there's a bus needed, I'm automatically volunteered. But the problem is they don't typically give buses with air conditioning to coaches and teachers that are driving. So it felt like 95 in the bus today. And, of course, there's no AC. And then I got to ref some flag football games. So I promise the only time that I'll walk by you, I might stink, but the only time I'll walk by you is this time right here, okay? So as a teacher, one of the things that they teach you to do, and if there's any high school kids, previous high school kids, they've seen this, just act like you've never seen it. So one of the things that we did in that class, and what they teach you as a teacher, is that we have a lot of kinesthetic learners these days. And so you want everybody to be a part of the process as you teach. Well, I don't have a rope for everyone to be a part of the process. This is about as long as I get. But I think the illustration is pretty good. I stole it from a guy named Francis Chan. He's the love, whatever it's called, something love book. Crazy Love. Thank you. Okay, so I stole this from him, so I'm just telling you, if you go to YouTube, you can see it. Imagine this rope is your life, okay? And your life, I'm not talking about on earth, I'm talking about your existence. It just goes on, and imagine this rope goes on for forever, right? It goes on to the end of the auditorium, but just imagine that it goes on forever. And this rope is a timeline of your existence. But the funny thing about your existence is this little blue part in the rope is the time that you spend on earth, okay? And then the whole rest of this rope you're going to spend somewhere else. The funny thing about this rope is that a lot of times throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, I spend a lot of time focusing on this and not so much time focusing on the rest of this. Does that make sense? I spend a lot of time and I worry about things like, man, I'd really love to go out to eat, or maybe I'll just save, and I'm going to save this whole part right here so then for the next 20 years as I live, I can really enjoy this part right here. And man, if I don't have the nicest car, maybe I can get just a little bit nicer car. I get so wrapped up in this little part right here. And I fail to mention the part that goes all the way after. Maybe you're a little bit like that. Maybe you're a little bit like me, that maybe sometimes you get caught up a little bit more in this and a little bit less in this. And I think that's why we get together. And it was really funny as I was studying this. I used to have a lot of people that when I was growing up, I'll come back to the road, when I was growing up, that would say, you go to church 3 times a week? Isn't that a lot? And as we study through Hebrews 11 and we talk about Christians who are marred, who are beaten, who were killed, and I think about Jesus Christ and I think about what he suffered as he went to the cross, and I think to myself, isn't that a lot? I kind of owe it a little bit to be here 3 times a week so I can learn more and figure out how I'm going to spend the rest of my life, the rest of this rope, in the place that's the best for me to spend it in. Okay? Now, I want you to look at this. You probably can't see it, but I didn't want to make it too big because it can't be too big. But there's a little black line on this rope, and I'm going to call it the what if moment in your life. Okay? And I want to come back to that little black line. And I'm sorry I couldn't make it any bigger, but it would totally ruin the whole visual if it was really large. So Wednesday nights are hard for me because it's 45 minutes. It's such a long time. But then the last few people have ended pretty early, and so there's no pressure on me tonight. But what I would like to do, because we have 45 minutes, is I would like to go back, because sometimes I think, when we say, hey, let's read Hebrews chapter 11, 35 through 40. A lot of times we focus on that 35 through 40, but I want to be able to look back just a little bit and kind of start from the beginning so you're not so cramped in that one line, so we can really get the full thought. And I'm sorry that I may blow it for the person after me. So if you want to turn to Hebrews 11, and I'm going to go back and forth as to what the book says. We've been studying, we're second to the last, I'm second to the last of the book that we've been studying. The book that we've been studying is written by a guy named Randy Simons, who calls his Hall of Famers. I want to double back and just go to chapter 11, and we'll quick read, although I don't quick read, we'll quick read through this thing, and then we'll catch back up. So he says in 1, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed by God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offering. And by faith, he still speaks even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from his life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, It is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to Him must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who earnestly seek Him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir to the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful, who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand of the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. Let's skip down to 20. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned onto the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions about his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead of the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, and when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the people were marching around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and other prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and regained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the flurry of flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to release, so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and floggings, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskin, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in the deserts and mountains and in caves and holes in the ground. They were all commended by their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had promised something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. I know that was a lot of reading, so I apologize for that. But I think it kind of tells the story. There's a whole lot of by faith in that chapter. I think I'll come back to that. So the vocabulary in the closing verses of chapter 11 is pretty painful to read. It talks about being jeered, being stoned, being flogged, being chained, prison, sawed in two, which I can't seem to wrap my head around, and then death by the sword. It's been said that lives of early Christians consisted of persecution above ground and prayer below ground. Their lives expressed in the Colosseum were that of catacombs. And I found this little picture, and it looked a lot better on my computer screen. But that's kind of what the catacombs looked like in Rome. The early church of Rome might as well have been called the Church of the Catacombs. There were 60 catacombs near Rome, in which about 600 miles of galleries. The galleries are kind of like the little square in the middle with the dividers. They were 8 feet high, from 3 to 5 feet wide, and they containing on either side several rows of long, low, horizontal recesses, one above another, like berths on a ship. In these were dead bodies that were placed, and the front closed, either by a single marble slab or by several great tiles laid in mortar. I look at that, and because my father-in-law is in funerals, the death industry, check me on this, but you pretty much have three choices. I hope you know this. I'm getting really grim, but that's okay. You can be buried underground, you can be buried above ground, or you can go the ash route. Okay, so the way that I kind of look at these things is I kind of look at them like this. I kind of see them more as like a mausoleum, like our day mausoleum, right? But it's above instead of under. But what's really interesting about the catacombs and kind of the picture that's painted, because if you read further, it says the heads were found severed and their bodies and ribs and shoulder blades were broken and bones were broken and calloused with fire. So I kind of think about one of these, except it's not like a chosen destination for those people. Okay? We get the choice of a place like this. That wasn't a choice. That a lot of times that was a, you're going to go down there because you're going to die there. Okay? Some of the things that I was reading, and of course the internet's not always right, but it talked about how some people were, that was their prison sentence, was to go there to die. That's tough. That's tough for me to go out that way. I think I'm one of those in my sleep kind of guys. I don't know that I would want to be sawed in two. That's hard for me to handle, hard for me to grasp. So it says some were tortured. Not only were they tortured, but they could have been released. But they refused to be released because they did not want to recant on their faith. About 3 weeks ago, Ken started, it was after Kyle's lesson, which was really, really good. By the way, Kyle's first lesson was at family camp. I just want you to know that. He started preaching some on this, and I looked at my wife and I said, man, he's going to ruin my whole lesson. But then, man, he brought me back solid. In the bulletin, he talked about one of the young ladies in the Sudan that this week was sentenced to 100 lashes and then sentenced to be hung. But they're going to wait for the 7-month baby that's growing inside of her to be born before all this happens. That's happening because she married a Christian man and won't take that back. And for me, I mean, I read it, but it was another thing. I have a tendency sometimes, I'm only in the car for like 30 minutes, and so sometimes I'll just turn on sports because I don't get to turn on my TV as much as I did before I had kids. And so I'll just kind of catch up on the way to work. And they were talking about it on the way to work. And the guy was just appalled that I can't believe this is still going on. And what are we going to do about this? And I'm thinking to myself, brother, you don't read enough. This isn't the first time this happens. This happens all the time. You need to get out more. So he set me up pretty nice. Some were jeered, some were flogged. I'm going to just run over real quick to 2 Corinthians 11, 24 and 25. We're talking about Paul. Paul says, 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. Not sure why the minus one. 3 times I was beaten with a rod. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in open sea. He just goes on and on and on. And all he was trying to do was to spread the word of Christ. And for me, that's kind of tough because I have a problem stepping out of this building and walking down the road and knocking on somebody's door. And I know that when that happens, the worst thing that could happen is they tell me to leave. That's the worst that could happen. And I struggle with that. And Paul's getting beat to death nearly. And he still keeps going. Still keeps going. Faith does a funny thing. Some were chained and put in prison. It's an official governmental opposition, which still happens today, put in prison. Remember those in prison as if you were their fellow prisoners, and those who were mistreated as if yourselves were suffering. Some were stoned, sawed in two, put to death by the sword. These were the three of the most common means of death to those being persecuted. I guess kind of like the death penalty, but not quite. Some were destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. I think if you go down the list of tortured, jeered, flogged, chained, prison, stoned, sawed in two, or death by the sword, I think persecuted is probably the way I'd want to go if I was choosing the five. I don't know. I think there's something that I'll probably share that has been shared before, but I don't know if you know the story about Jim Elliot. There was a book and a movie made about Jim Elliot. Jim Elliot was a boy who loved Jesus. One day, a friend of his parents asked him if he was going to be a preacher when he grew up. I don't know, Jim replied, but I would like to tell someone about Jesus that has never heard of him before. And that is just what happened. When Jim grew up, he and his wife, Betty, were missionaries to the Indians in South America. They met a missionary from Ecuador who told them about the needs of the Indians in that country. There were several different tribes of Indians living in the jungle. Some of them were being taught by missionaries already. Others had never heard of Jesus. One of these tribes was a wild and savage people called the Yakas. The Yakas were great fighters in the jungle. They hunted wild pigs, monkeys, and jaguars with their spears and bows and arrows. The Yaka Indians always went barefoot, and they could recognize another person's footprint like we recognize the faces of our friends. But Yakas didn't know Jesus. Their lives were dark and sad and full of fear. They had many cruel customs. If they saw anyone in the jungle who was not of their tribe, they would sneak up and kill them with their spears. They also speared each other, killing their own friends and relatives during the slightest quarrel. When a man killed another man, the family of the dead man would hunt for the killer and spear him too. Often parents killed their own children just because they were tired of taking care of them. Everyone was always afraid of being suddenly killed. That is how people live when they don't know anything about Jesus or about God's laws and how to be kind. Jim and Betty Elliott and their friends felt sorry for the Yaka Indians. They wanted to help them learn about Jesus so they could be free from their darkness and fear. But how could they get into the Yaka's village without being killed? Several missionary families built themselves houses in the jungle. They lived with a friendly tribe of, I'm going to go with Quokka Indians across the river from the Yakas. They learned the Indian language and preached to them about Jesus. Many of the Quokka Indians became Christians. But Jim could not forget about the poor, sad Yaka Indians. He wanted to tell them about Jesus too. There was one Yaka girl who lived in the friendly Quokka Indians. Her name was Dayuma. She had run away from the Yakas several years before when someone was trying to kill her. Now the missionaries talked with her to learn the Yaka language. The missionaries decided to try flying their little plane over the Yaka village and dropping gifts to the Indians. They hoped that this would be a way to make friends with the Yakas. They would put the presents in baskets at the end of the strong fishing line and lower it down from the open door of the plane. Nate Saint, the pilot experimented until he found a way to release the bucket from the line and set it on the ground. They did this numerous times, and on the sixth flight, after the Yakas had taken the gift basket, they held onto the line for a few minutes. When they let go, there was a present from the missionaries, a handband woven of feathers. The next time they sent the basket back up on the line is a basket with a beautiful tame parrot with a banana for the parrot to eat. Jim and his friends praised the Lord. It seemed like the Yakas were becoming friendly. Other people said, you fellas are crazy to waste all your good stuff on the Yakas. They will be just as mean as before. But the missionaries kept praying that God would make the Yaka Indians friendly so that they could tell them about Jesus. After about 2 months of flying over the Yaka village with gifts, the missionaries decided it was time to land on the little beach beside the river close to where the Yakas lived. They would build themselves a treehouse to live in and try to talk to the Yakas. There were five men altogether, Jim, Nate, and three other named Pete, Roger, and Ed. They prayed and talked with their wives for a long time before they made the decision to move to the Yakas country. All of them knew very well what the danger was, but they loved God and knew that they belonged to Him. They were not afraid to die. or to go to heaven. So they landed their plane beside the river and built a house and a small tree. Some of the men flew over the Aka village again, calling, "Come to the river. We want to visit with you." Then they camped and waited. On the third day, the men were sitting in their camp, and suddenly they heard a shout from across the river. Their hearts jumped as they turned to look. Three Akas were standing, stepping out of the woods, a man and two women, calling out, "Welcome, welcome," in the Aka language. Their hearts jumped as they turned to look. Jim waded across to meet them. He took their hand and helped them back across the missionary camp. The five missionaries tried hard to show the Akas that they wanted to be friends. They gave them food, gifts, and smiled and talked. They soon nicknamed the Anka man George. And when George asked for a ride in the plane, they were happy to give him one. They flew the plane low over the Anka village once more, and George laughed with delight as he recognized his home. He leaned out to wave and yell at other Ankas. The plane landed back at camp. The five missionaries gave thanks to God out loud, looking up to the sky so that the three Ankas could see what they were doing. That night, three Ankas returned to the village. They did not invite the missionaries to come with them, so Jim and his friends stayed at the camp. That was on Friday. On Sunday, Nate called his wife on the radio to say that the big group of Anka men were coming, just in time for church service. He told her excitedly, "This is the big day. I'll call you back this afternoon and let you know what happens." So the missionaries' wives waited eagerly that afternoon. They were hoping to find out if the men had been able to visit the Anka's village, but the afternoon passed, and the men did not call, as they had promised. Night came on, and the women began to worry. What could have happened? Were the missionaries safe? The next day, more men took another plane and flew over the camp. They brought back sad news. Jim and Nate and their friends were all dead. The Anka Indians had killed them with their spears. The five missionaries had guns with them in the camp, but they did not use them to fight the Indians. When the Anka men came toward them with their spears, they did not shoot back with their guns. They knew that if they would shoot the Indians, they could possibly save their own lives. But then they would never be able to teach the Akas about Jesus. So they chose to let themselves be killed and let the Akas have another chance to become Christians. It's pretty tough. It's pretty tough for me. We live in a society where we tell each other, stand up for yourself. You know, if somebody's coming, you have to defend yourselves. And these guys, I think they knew. Obviously, they knew. They had the ability to do it, and instead, they let it happen. I think it goes back to faith. Faith does a funny thing sometimes. When you're not afraid to die because you know where you're going to go. You have that faith that you're doing what the Lord asked you to do. And so everything is well in your soul. The church in the Western world has been pretty protected, almost pampered against this kind of treatment. During the 20th century, we must be mindful of the fact that others, too, have endured such pain. We must also realize it may not always be true of Christianity, even the Western world. First Peter, he says, Dear friends, do not be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering, as though something strange was happening to you. The pampered church was one day become a persecuted church, and then it will be made known who the true men and women of faith really are. If we, like the heroes of Hebrews 11, are called to suffer with God, where will we stand? I think I've told you this before. When Nikki and I were struggling to get pregnant, one of the things that really provided safety in the process was the verse Jeremiah 29:11, that there's hope, and hope and faith together are a pretty strong combination, especially for Christianity. I want to hit five quick points about the verses, and then I want to go back to that story because I think it's got a pretty cool little ending. So in 38, God remembered and rewarded the others as people the world was not worthy of. He says that in verse 38, the world will be punished for abusing God's people. It's just a matter of time. It is also important for us to always remember that the approval is from God, and the approval doesn't come from men. And that's a tough thing sometimes because, man, I can really work a whole lot harder when somebody's looking. And I don't realize sometimes that there's always somebody looking. And that my joy should come from Him and not from, say, the people I work with or the people that I work for. Verse 39 reads, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised on earth. Their faith was not in some immediate fulfillment of a promise, but in the ultimate fulfillment of the promises. This is where faith is most tested and where it most matters. And we live by faith even when we do not see the immediate results. Lastly, verse 40, God has planned something better that goes along with the whole hope thing, that goes along with the rope. If we go shallow and we look at the 70, 80, 90, hopefully 100 years that you live on this earth, you're going to have some trials and tribulations. But if your focus is on the material aspects or the things that you're focused on while you're alive, you're going to have a rough time in the end. Focus on what's left at the end. If we have blessings and privilege that these heroes did not have, then this makes their faith even more extraordinary. I want to go back to that and finish up that story real quick. So the Akkas always remembered those five strange white men who had been so kind to them and had not tried to kill them. So years later, when more missionaries tried to again go speak to the Akkas about Jesus, Jim's wife, they later were ready to listen. Several of the men who had helped to kill Jim and his friends with their spears now became Christians. One of them gave his testimony at a meeting. He counted on his fingers and said, "I have killed 12 people with my spear, but I did that when my heart was black. Now Jesus' blood has washed my heart clean, so I don't live like that anymore." God's love has changed his life. One of the things that's really neat about this area, I'm going to take a quick drink because I'm... There's a group called the Montgomery County, the Junior League of Montgomery County. And one of the things that they do for educators in the area is they bring guest speakers in. I don't know if you know who Ron Clark is, but he's a pretty well-known educator. But they try to bring in people, and they bring them in to speak to teachers and principals and paraprofessionals and anybody who's wanting to go. And they try to keep it educationally based so you can get something, hopefully, that you can take back to the classroom. This year, they brought in a lady by the name of Liz Murray. Liz Murray has a really, really interesting story. Liz Murray was homeless at the age of 15 years old. She was born to drug addict parents, one of which died when she was about 18 years old. Her mom died at 18. She fought cancer and everything else along the way. Dad was put in a mental place, and she didn't talk much about him until closer to the very end. And there were a lot of things that I took for it. By the way, her book is called Breaking Dawn, and she refers to at night she would get on the subway, and she would just continuously ride the subway because it was warm and felt safe there. So that kind of tells you where she was at. The sad part about this is she didn't choose that life. She was born into it. But the great thing about it is she didn't let her life define her. She redefined her life. And she made mention of Christianity a couple of times throughout her presentation, which I liked even more. But there was one part, and I want to come back to it. It was her what if moment. And she had dropped out of high school at 15. She didn't have any money. She kind of went from bedroom to bedroom, sleeping on friends' couches, and then, of course, sleeping in the subway, and she had another sister, and you know, so on and so forth. But she decided, she said, when she was standing at the burial of her mom, that, you know, that when you die and you don't have any money, they put you in a box, and they had written her name wrong, and they had crossed out her name and rewrote her name, and she said, when I sat there, I knew there was something better for my life. And so she went to a local bar, and she scrounged up enough money to start the process of going back to high school. She wanted to go back to get her GED. And so she started going on these. The way it works in New York is you basically have to interview. It's almost like college. Like you, the application process, and then you sit in and you interview. And there's really good schools and there's really poor schools that aren't very good. And so she said she started the process, but she was an 18-year-old freshman that didn't have like two credits. She didn't have any high school credit. So she said she started the process, and she kept getting told no, 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 no. And so she finally got to the point where she was starting to get to that, it's just not going to happen for me. Maybe I need to figure out a different plan. And she said she had that what-if moment. She was standing in the middle of the street, I'm thinking like sidewalk, and she said she reached into her pocket, and she pulled out what would have probably been about $5. And she said her friends were going to go get pizza at this local pizza joint. And she said, I stood in the street, and I looked at that money, and I had enough money to either go get pizza with my friends or get the next bus ride to the next place for me to interview. And she said, I sat there and I thought, what if? What if I went and they said no? I missed out on the pizza. But what if I go and that's my shot? That's my place. So she said, I told him no. I got on the bus. I went to the next place. She said, I sat down with that man. That man, he said, why do you want to be here? And she said, I told him why I wanted to be there. She said, I told him I'd work harder than anybody else. He got up and he shook my hand and he said, welcome. And she said, that what if moment in my life, I graduated high school in 2 years. She got a scholarship from the Wall Street Journal, did an interview with different teens. They had to write a story about their lives. She got that. She went to Harvard. She got a 4-year degree from Harvard. She now has a master's degree. I believe she's working on a doctorate. But that what if moment in her life changed everything. She could have gotten pizza and fulfilled that one desire, that one need, but instead she did what she felt like she was called to do, and that one chance gave her the opportunity that she has right now where she speaks to people like me for inspiration. I think as you look through and we started reading, I said there's a whole lot of faith this and faith that and these people of faith. And I think each one of those people had a what if moment in their life. Noah had the what if moment. I need to build a boat and it hadn't rained in a long time. Moses had a what if moment. Let's take a bunch of people and let's take off and then run through a Red Sea. I think the Bible is chock full of these life moments, of what if moments. And people, even though they didn't know why, they felt like God was calling them to do it. Sometimes I think we need to ask ourselves, and that's why I did this little black line, and I know I'm running out of time, but there's a moment in your life that you're going to have your what if moment. And your what if moment may be really off as to what you do on a day-to-day basis. What if you went to Cambodia in the summer and worked with a group of orphans? What if you decided to go to the Sudan and work with Tyrone? What if you got out and started knocking doors and telling people about Jesus? All of these things are what if moments. And maybe they're not comfortable for you, they're not comfortable for me. But what if you had that moment where you could change somebody else's life? I'm running out of time, so I'll leave you with one last story. And I think Ken has already said it, but I'm going to say it. Act like you never heard it. So a woman was diagnosed with a terminal illness and given 3 months to live. She asked her pastor to come to her home to discuss her final wishes. She told him which song she wanted to be sung at her funeral, what scriptures she wanted to be read, and which outfit she wanted to be buried in. Then she said, one more thing. I would like to be buried with a fork in my hand. The pastor was surprised. The woman explained, in all of my years of attending church socials and potluck dinners, I always remember that when the dishes of the main course were being cleaned, someone would inevitably say to everyone to keep your fork. It was my favorite time of the dinner because I knew something better was coming. Like velvety chocolate cake or deep dish apple pie. Something wonderful. So I want people to see me in the casket with the fork in my hand and wonder, what's the fork for? Then I want to tell them, keep your fork because the best is yet to come. The pastor's eyes welled up with tears of joy as he bid the woman goodbye. He realized she had a better grasp of heaven than he did, and he knew something better was coming. At the funeral, when people asked him why she was holding the fork, the pastor told him of the conversation he had had with the woman before she died. She said he could stop thinking about, he said he could not stop thinking about the fork and knew they probably would not be able to stop thinking about it either. He was right. Tonight, the one thing that I want you to remember, the best is yet to come. I would like for you to not focus so much on the blue and focus on what comes after. And I want you to focus on other people's blue and what comes after. And I want you to think about Jim Elliot, who knew that he was probably going to die, but he was going to die doing what he felt the Lord had called him to do. Now, I'm not asking you to go do, you know, that, but think about it. Think about jumping out of your comfort zone, because by faith, the Lord is asking you to help others whose heart may be black, but the blood of Jesus will wash them clean. That's what I ask you to do tonight. Let's pray real quick. Dear Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for the time that we get to spend together. Thank you for the people that come here every Wednesday night and they serve us meals and give us a chance to enjoy fellowship with each other. Thank you for the teachers this quarter and their devotion to studying your word and bringing your message to us. Thank you for the young men that stood up tonight to lead us in a small worship and the songs and the prayers. Lord, I ask you to guide those young men as they go through their high school and college period. Lord, be with us this week, this weekend, as we serve you and find out how we can best utilize our service to your kingdom. Thank you for everything you do for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I made it. Go get your kiddos.